Hello and welcome to episode 12 of Off the Rails with me, Claire. And I have a very exciting guest today who is my sister, Sarah. She's a content lead in the UX world, which we'll dive into and learn all about it. It'll be a bit of an education for me as well to understand exactly what my sister does on a day-to-day basis. So welcome, Sarah, to my podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me. I've watched many, but you know, being a participant now is something different, but yeah, happy to help and share the platform on UX and everything that's brought me here today.
Exactly. So for context, my sister's based in Manchester. I'm in Porto, so hence why we're having a video call as opposed to catching up over a glass of wine and doing a podcast, which is very much our thing. But on this occasion, we're keeping it to strictly work. So yeah, as I say, I want to get into kind of the UX world and know more about it. The reason why I'm doing this is, for anybody listening, I often speak to people in a more design, fashion, textiles, beauty kind of world, because those are the worlds that I've been very much familiar with, I've worked with. However, I've also worked through e-commerce for the majority of my career, and I've worked alongside or handed over certain projects to UX design, to copywriters, to marketing departments, all within a realm of similar kind of ilk of what Sarah has or is doing right now. So I think it's useful to kind of close the gap on the taboo of what a UX designer does and learn a little bit more about that today, but also the creative world in general isn't just about the kind of artistic side. There is all of these different, as I say, these other realms that we can dive into. So without further ado, I have a lot of questions that I'd already sent across, which I want to go into. Some of them for people listening, they might seem a little bit obvious because Sarah is my sister. However, there's still parts of family and relatives that you don't know when it comes to their professional life, what they do on a day-to-day basis. So let's start with one that I think anybody listening would find interesting. You're now a content design lead, as we've mentioned at the top. But what is it you wanted to do when you were very young? What was your ambition? What was your kind of, when I grow up, I want to be, what was that for you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know, to be honest. I just knew I was obsessed with books, words, learning, but most importantly, stories. They just really fascinated me. I was the kid that was always in the library, or when we went shopping, you were always going off like to the clothes section. I was always going off to the book section, and you know, mum would come and find me sitting on the floor reading a book, very much the Matilda of the world. But yeah, I didn't quite know whether I wanted to be a writer, but I just knew I was obsessed with books and learning and storytelling ultimately.
Yeah. And that thing that's, I have as kind of my next statement /question is, for as long as I remember, you always had, your head in a book. So much so you had your own bookshelf, which wasn't just a shelf. It was a book. What would you call it? Like a book stand, a book cupboard in your room. Okay. Yeah, bookcase, that's it, exactly. I don't even know why I lost the word for that. But yeah, as a little girl, and just that was always what, you had a collection of books from, yeah, I remember like Enid Blyton and, you know, them like as teenagers, those Diary of and all these kind of things. Yeah, I remember all those when we were growing up. So yeah, it's for as long as I remember, you definitely were the bookworm of the family. So kind of didn't really know what you wanted to do, but had a passion, loved reading, knew that's kind of where you felt good and you enjoyed doing it. And I think that's always the foundation of anything. You kind of have a passion and a love for something. So let's kind of fast forward a bit to when you were at university. So you did a BA in English literature and journalism, and then you went on to magazine journalism. So what, kind of take me through from that stage when you first went to uni, tell us all about where you went to uni, how you decided on that, your journey through that to then kind of the step change to magazine journalism.
Yeah, I guess it was the English literature that was always what started me in my ambition of like what I knew I wanted to do in further life. It was like a natural course. It's something I was always really interested in at school, college, and you know, nothing much changed. Like I said, I find stories and people super interesting, which is essentially what my role is now by storytelling. I just do it through products and brands. But yeah, the route to actually getting into what I do today, or who, what my interests are, and you know, further study at higher education, I guess mum wouldn't be really too proud of me retelling this one. But yeah, basically I was always a top set, overachieving student in school, aced my GCSEs, like then just happened to take a somewhat laid back approach, I guess you could say, to my A-levels. I had planned to go to Queen's University to read English. Like I said, that was kind of the bookworm in me. I just loved reading. Didn't know what I wanted to do out of it. Didn't know if I wanted to be an author. Didn't know if I wanted to be an editor. It was just that was what I wanted. I knew I loved English. However, things didn't go quite to plan. As I mentioned, I took my foot off the gas. Got a bit of a part-time job, so got the taste of having my own money and prioritised overtime over revision. Would not advise that, kids. Not a great route to go down. So needless to say, my A-level results weren't as sparkling as my somewhat predicted GCSEs. So, you know, when results day came, I was actually pretty floored. I guess in hindsight, you could say that was probably one of my biggest learnings and failures in like your achievements and what people say like is a foundation for what makes you. But I always remember that day very, very vividly. I guess maybe could you say there was a little bit of arrogance in it, thinking, oh yeah, like this is my predicted grades, like I'm gonna be fine, I breeze through it, blah blah blah. But that didn't happen. And I'd given up all my options for university to go to Queen's. So that was pretty abysmal when I wasn't accepted because I was one grade out, and because English was obviously such a popular course for people to read and study, it, you know, they were, you need these grades, that's it. So yeah, I was like, okay, back to square one, what do I do? So I thought, okay, I'll just take a year out, maybe work some more, get some money in my pocket, go backpacking, which was something I've always wanted to do, and travel the world, which again is one of my favourite pastimes. You know, the travelling bug is always biting at me, but mum had other plans. I wasn't allowed nor supported on that venture, as she knew I'd never come back to study. And you know what? She was right. Knowing myself 20 years later, I wouldn't have. I just never would have come back to the higher education forum. Mums, they always know, right? But yeah, I sucked up my pride, licked my very self-inflicted wounds, and decided I could either repeat a year or go through the clearing process, which, if anyone doesn't know, I don't know if it's the same across all countries, but in the UK, like if you don't get your predicted grades or you don't get the acceptance based on your grades to the university, you go through this process, which is like a pool of courses that are available to kind of take anyone on board, any student at any university. That's the clearing process, or what it was 20 years ago. It may have changed. But yeah, I spoke to my cousin slash inspiration slash one of my besties, Leanne, who studied the same degree, English Lit and Journalism, at the same uni, to ask her opinions of that particular course, because I had no idea of what journalism was at the time, apart from, you know, it's just journalists are on the TV or in the papers. I didn't know what the actual study of it was. It was never sort of in the curriculum at school. And I was sold within 5 minutes. I was like, yeah, it sounds really cool, really interesting, like really buzzy. Buzzy, is that even a word? But yeah, and off to UCLan I went. I then realised after a year of combined honours, writing was my passion, not reading. So that was the journalism aspect. But I majored then in journalism, but it was only my third year I realised that my degree wouldn't be NCTJ accredited. So I, you know, being able to go to Fleet Street or straight into a paper or a magazine or into the journalism world, I'd be laughed straight out because I didn't have the accreditation to do it. So a 1 year full-time postgrad was my only option, that or redo another bachelor's. And frankly, my liver couldn't take another three years of the £2 double body limos. But you know, I look back and think it was kismet, it was fate, and I don't regret a second of it whatsoever. And they ultimately led me to finding my passion of research and storytelling.
So you There's like a couple of lessons in there, isn't there? Like a lot of people often think, oh, you know, we started with you've always loved reading. There was always something in books. And some would say, oh, right, well, you're lucky you've always known what you were going to do. But even through just that couple of minutes of, yes, of course, it was the first 21 years of your life, but, you know, things didn't work out because of your potential attitude towards the exams. However, you still landed where you needed to be at the right time, and things, you know, took slightly different directions. However, the path was still in the same, it had the same course. So I think that's something that for people listening, and I have a lot of people either wanting to change the careers that approach me, or people that are starting out in the career and don't quite know. And I think what's important from just this first sort of 15 minutes section of this particular talk is, you don't have to know everything. And if things don't work out, there's always, you know, be prepared to pivot, be prepared to change a little bit, because you'll always get where you're meant to be if you know, see that through. So I think that's what's nice. Like, you know, you use the word fail, which again, I think is a word that we should use more. People are so afraid of it. But when you fail, you learn. And I think that is the most important aspect of failure, is that's the only time you do learn. You don't learn from success, you learn from failing to gain success. So that's really important.
And it's character building as well. And you know, it's like when you say about a career change or what you want to do, like as long as you're always on an upwards trajectory, you're in the right direction. Like it's when you start backtracking or, you know, being stalemate, like, and to your point, not pivoting, that's, you know, also a failure because you're not challenging yourself. But yeah, no.
Exactly, which is the biggest thing. I think without challenge, you don't feel like you're achieving, and I think that's really important to keep yourself. Yeah, there's a lot in self-motivation, which is a whole other topic. But yeah, so you're at university, you're studying, you're doing your master's now. So you're in your final couple of weeks, if I remember rightly, in your master's. So let's go back there. You're in your final couple of weeks, and all I remember was you telling me you're going to Dubai and my heart being broken. But fill in the gap. What happened? You were in the last couple of weeks and you got offered the job.
So I mean, I was pretty lucky, to be fair. It was during the summer of my final sort of dissertation of my master's, or like, you know, designing and editing and writing my magazine. I'd done a 15,000 word dissertation. I didn't fancy a 25,000 one for my master's, so I chose that. I'm thinking that designing and writing and editing my own 68-page magazine would be easier. It wasn't, trust me. It was much harder. But yeah, I was actually interviewing throughout that whole summer semester to try and get a job at the end of it, you know, because that's kind of what I thought. I was so done with uni at this point, like 4 years solid back to back. So I was interviewing, and then during that summer, I got offered my first role at a publishing house in Dubai, in the UAE. Ironically, on the day of my last law exam. And then, you know, 16 days later, I was boarding a plane with a one-way ticket to the desert at 22, with a whole host of adventures ahead of me. But you know, for those that don't know, particularly my age or that time, it was 2008, so my adventure bucket list was caught short due to the recession. So back home I fled again, feeling a bit of a failure, tail between my legs. Even though it was beyond my control, that the business had collapsed, it was just the state of the world and where we were. Obviously, we were going through a recession, and it just wasn't financially feasible or secure, for me, like personal security, for me to stay there. But you know, in what the opportunity via good old Guardian Jobs, if you remember it back in the day, there was an advert I'd seen to be a freelance copywriter at the retail giant, Littlewoods Berry Group. And I had an amazing boss and mentor in copywriting extraordinaire, Mark Yarrow, at the time, who showed me the ropes of how my journalism skills could translate into selling products. Who knew? But yeah, it was a real sort of like deep dive into like two worlds that seem very different, but actually cross-pollinate with one another.
Okay, so you in Dubai, in the world of journalism, glamour, of course, that was, as you kind of stated, cut somewhat short. You were there for like what, over a year?
Just under a year, about 11, 10-11 months.
Got a taste of that sort of lifestyle, came back, met somebody that's influenced you. You know, when you've mentioned somebody's name, I think that carries a lot of positive weight that, you know, that person kind of, put you on some sort of ladder that has led you to where you are right now. And so you say, like, journalism, you can translate that into selling products. So you went into Very, which was writing about the fashion world, where obviously you and I for a long time could actually connect and I understood what you were talking about. So what was that like? Was it very different? Was it a shock to the system? Was it a good learning curve? What, you know, because it was two very different worlds. Here you were in Dubai at parties, covering really exciting events, writing about local celebrities. Then you're back in the UK. It's fashion. It's a well-known kind of catalogue, websites, you know, this type of thing. So polar opposites. What was that shift like for you?
It was really hard initially. I met lots of bossy buyers. I realised the importance, and likewise that transition. Like, I was able to understand your trade and what you were doing, and the amount of responsibility that a buyer has in the world. But yeah, like I said, initially very hard. Because it was changing and transforming my skill set that I'd spent 4 solid years studying to hone and perfect, then putting it into real life world for another year, to then, you know, changing that long form to short form copy. That's ultimately the difference. So it was the idea of selling that story was no different to ultimately selling a holiday wardrobe, for example. You still need a hook and a USP to sell the product. And as time and companies and jobs went by, working with other great copywriters and content designers, I was able to hone my skills, and it just ultimately became second nature. And as they say, the rest is history, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that, like, through your journey of where you've been to where you are, it's actually, you know, regardless of you and I being sisters, only sitting and listening now to the journey you've been through, the change has been enormous, and one through circumstantial of what's happened to you and where you need to pivot and stay agile and keep moving, but also the way of the world. So, you know, gone, not completely gone, but definitely in that direction, are the days of glossy magazines. Everything is so much more online. So, you know, that has changed massively. So people in that industry have had to adapt and change, of course, as well. So you've gone through that change. You're then in the world of copywriting. Mm-hmm. So what is that like? What's that change like once you move again from, you know, I think you were at Littlewoods and then you moved to, was it Aldi, the agency you worked?
Yeah, that was advertising, McCann advertising agency I kind of worked into. So yeah, it was that natural progression from journalism into copywriting into UX, and the importance of that, you know, being able to be, well, ultimately you have to be agile, right? Because the platform and it's always transforming and ever changing. So being agile and able to pivot are key skills, 100%, no doubt about it. If you stand still, you never get anywhere. And I guess in my almost 20-year career, that's horrible to think, I've seen the shift from, like you mentioned, from print to digital, job title and skill set change, as has the user and consumer behavior and forum. Like, you know, you simply must keep moving, train, learn and upskill to stay relevant. Being ignorant to change will get you nowhere. You know, UX is about creating products. It's about providing that meaningful and relevant experience to users. If you're not relevant, no one's going to buy into you. So they're not going to buy into your brand, buy into your product, buy into your platform, whatever it is you're selling, whether, you know, it's a dress or a mascara or a piece of, you know, software as a service, like what we call in the industry SaaS. Like, it's, you know, it's just not going to happen. And, you know, being a UX writer / content designer, whatever, you know, job title you take up under the umbrella now, same things. You need you need to have a set of skills. Like, you need to be an exceptional communicator, be brilliant at collaborating. If you can't collaborate, you're in the wrong job, because there's no I in team. You need to have strong research and analytical skills, a gift for crafting concise, user-friendly micro copy, because, you know, as I said before, I touched on user behaviors, people don't have the attention span like we used to. Like, you say you just sit down and read a magazine, you know, maybe with a cup of coffee for like an hour a day. Now you don't. You digest your news or your information in, you know, push notifications, you know, 10 minute like news stories, not one but the whole paper, like just flipping through article, you read the headline, yeah, I've got it. Like, we're moving as consumers now, we're just moving so much faster. So being able to have micro copy, being able to write micro copy is a key skill, 100% or not. And believe it or not, I can use 5 words instead of 50. And a deep understanding of that user experience design, which includes, like, you know, key principles, methodologies and processes. That holistic UX process involves every element, like lots of different elements, should I say. It includes research, design, both product and content, strategy, knowing what will be of use to your users and what won't. You know, there's no point selling something that, you know, is no benefit to anyone. It's just redundant. You get people bouncing, no thank you. And again, if you're not moving with the time and trends, you're not able to offer a product that's any use to a user, so you're not making a profit. And ultimately, that's what these things are out here to do. Like, we're all out here to generate money. You know, it's an economic environment, regardless of what, you know, industry you're in. So whether it be beans and jeans, an insurance policy, or a new social media platform, for example, like, it's about relevancy and upskilling and training and always being at the forefront of whatever your industry is. But especially in UX, it's ever evolving. Like, you know, last year we had ChatGPT. This year we're talking about AI efficiencies. It's like, oh my God, am I going to be able to do my job in 10 years? Like, or is a robot going to replace me? You know, there's all those things, but you have to keep your ear close to the ground and always a nose in a book or on a screen reading and updating.
Yeah, because nothing's going to wait for you. I think that's the moral of everything right now. You know, it's moving incredibly fast. Technology is moving faster than ever. At least it feels that way with everything that's coming through. So I think you're completely right. And it's also, you know, you're somebody that adapts very, or at least from the outset, what people feel internally, I can't fill in the gaps for you, but at least from the outset, you kind of, okay, challenge accepted. Let's get on with it. Let's see how I do here. It's fail or foe kind of thing. And I think you're that type of person that just takes it and runs with it, which is brilliant. And I think, again, it's just for anybody listening that fears that, there is nothing to fear. I think everything is to gain. And I always think that through the philosophy of life as well. Go for it. And again, failing isn't bad. It's a learning curve. I think the word failure has come to be this kind of this word that we fear, but it's absolutely not. So yeah, I think I could listen to you all day. I think what you say is just, yeah, you say it so eloquently and so beautifully. And yeah, I think sometimes that you should be the one doing the podcast because you're the wordsmith here versus me as it goes with sisters. But anyway, I'm giving it a go. And I take, you were very good at giving me feedback. So that's always positive.
Oh, and as you know, the great Albert Einstein once said, failure is success in progress. And if you can, you know, can't get on board with Einstein, then good luck to you. But you know, I never see anything as a failure. I see everything. I used to have that kind of negative mindset, but something switched, and maybe that's with age, maybe it's with experience and wisdom. But you know, there's also the age-old quote, who I can't quite put a name to it now, is, but you know, fake it till you make it. Like, if you don't know something, you know, be in the room, be present, always be open to learning, because you know, you can get on in life if you're willing to try. If you're not, you're never going to get out of the starting blocks, because you just won't. You won't succeed if you're not willing to put yourself out there. And, you know, what's the worst that could happen, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
A little bit of red face in a meeting maybe, or at the end of an email or Zoom chat or team chat, whatever. Like, oh, God, yeah, I should have known that. Or, oh, I shouldn't have said that. so what? Like,
yeah, we've all been there, done that, you know, got the t-shirt. I think it's better to have experienced that than to not have. Yeah. I always believe in that sentiment.
Always ask the 5 W's. It's like the fundamentals of journalism. This is the one thing I learned, and it always sticks with me, and it applies to everything: life, work, romance. The 5 W's: who, what, where, why, when. Who are you with? Why are you there? Like, you know, if you're asking personal, but you know, in life, like at work, if you get a brief or you know you're going to a meeting, it's those 5 W's: who, what, where, why, when. Like, who's it for? Why is it happening? When is it happening? You know, those are all the directives you need for your answers to anything. So I think those are the fundamentals of anything, and for me is always the 5 W's, but that's just having a curious mind. I can't
help. Exactly, you're inquisitive. So do you think there's anything else that we need to know about UX in your realm of what you've learned, what you're willing to learn? Is there anything that you think, I want to share that? That's something like, what's a day in the life kind of look like? What is it that we should kind of know a little bit more, or you think we've covered?
I work for a large supermarket at the moment, Asda, and we're in the process of migrating from Walmart's platform to our own. So no 2 days are the same. We're not actually in a run state at the minute, which is frustrating. But it's also because that means I can't design great products, which doesn't mean to say it's not happening. It will in H2, but no 2 days are the same at the minute, to answer your question. Like, one day could be doing some user testing, and another it's, you know, doing some strategy planning as a lead for the team. Like, what do I want the team to achieve? It could be putting together frameworks for learning and development. You know, it might be doing some editing. It might be looking at end-to-end journeys and how we improve that for, you know, the next transition state that's going to be run out. You know, it's very, very different, but that's obviously just specific to this role. But at the moment, in my role as a leader, I've kind of been doing this for the last 5 years, is roughly like, what advice I would give?
Yeah, exactly. You know, anybody that's kind of listening to this thinking, all right, well, yeah, I started out there, or I may be in a role right now which is more copy led, and I want to get more, you know, learn more about the UX field. I want to go down that route because ultimately that's where we're being led, that's the future, that's where, you know, the more jobs are happening. Yeah. So, you know, if somebody's kind of listening to this thinking, what could I do to upskill myself? What is it that I really need to know? The fundamental kind of
I think
four things that you need to know about the job, or should have, or maybe they can upskill themselves through different ways, you know?
I mean, like I said, there's so many facets to UX. It's like research, design, content, writing. It's all very different. So kind of collectively, if I was to say anything, I would say, you know, go and do your research on research. You know, learn the differences between quantitative and qualitative research. Like, what is that fundamentally like? Look into what like lean UX is. Like, there's loads of frameworks and canvases out there like that will give you a starting guide to understand a little bit more about it. There's lots of online courses, but try and see if you can get some work experience, like if you're really fundamentally at that stage of your career, because you'll know whether or not it's for you. It's a very fast-paced environment, things change, you know, you can't be precious about your designs, concepts, copy, creative, whatever. You know, you'll find that anyway in the creative industry. You just physically can't, you'd never succeed. You have to take it on the chin if someone says they don't like it. But you know, go back to your 5 W's principles, always ask why. You know, why doesn't it? And it's not like offensive, it's more like, well, I need to understand, you're a user, you may be a stakeholder in my business, but you're ultimately a user. Why is it that you don't like this? You know, that would be
that. But I think that's another good thing, regardless of it being you know, specific. Well, it's not specific to UX, but I like that topic because it's feedback. And I think, again, to move forward and to better yourself and what you're doing, you need constructive feedback from those that are giving you a statement. And I think that's very different. And I think anybody that's listening to that as well, whether you're working with peers or if it's coming from leadership, when somebody makes a statement about how or why they don't know why they don't like something, really press on, you know, what could I do differently? What are the fundamental things that you're not clicking with or that I'm not getting? Because without feedback, you cannot move forward. So I think that's just to call out that piece of advice that you've given. It really is, because I've worked in so many places over the years that people just are very quick to, I don't like it.
Yeah, but that's my point.
And you're waiting for the next thing and you're like,
but that's I found myself in plenty of sticky situations, and you know, if you know me like you do, but maybe your listeners might not, you'll know that I can be quite stubborn and you know, a bit prickly at times. And I've been told that by previous managers, because I'll just say why, like, not to like my managers, but like to stakeholders, you know, who may then feedback and go, oh, well, it was a really awkward meeting, like Sarah wasn't receptive to it. And I was like, I was receptive. I need to understand why, because fundamentally, like, if you don't like something or you don't agree with a creative or design decision, I need to understand why. Not because it irks me, because you don't like my work professionally. I've pull myself apart from that, like, as a, and that is to anyone who wants to be in content design or UX writing. Like, if you can't self-sabotage your own work, then you're in the wrong career, because your words will always be pulled apart. Like, regardless, your copy will always be pulled apart. So don't be precious over it. But it's the fundamental why. Just, you know, I'd like constructive criticism, because I need to learn to move forward. Like, otherwise, my point previous, your stalemate. Well, okay. Yeah. I can't go back to the drawing board, because this is how I see it. This is how I've perceived your brief. This is how I've perceived the research. What do you want me to do else differently? Why isn't it working for you? Give me your reasoning why. And if they can't, then that's subjective, and subjective opinions don't matter in the design process. But if you were to ask me what piece of advice I would give as a UX leader, then that would be a little bit different. I mean, maybe I sound like a hypocrite now, but I would be all about setting the standard. Be that in the application of conducting yourself around your team and establishing those processes, you know, set design standards, which in ultimately will return in ensuring your team's efficiency and effectiveness, which is obviously what everybody wants. Like, you want to be not churning, but, you know, rolling out great work constantly and keeping everyone effective and efficient. And then, you know, hopefully that evolves into team satisfaction. You can all go out for a savvy bee after work.
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot in that. You know, you've put it in a nutshell, but if you really unpack it, there's a hell of a lot in it, because everybody uses the word leadership. However, it's not just for leaders. It's good for those that sit under that management level to understand what to expect from leaders as well, and how to challenge in a respectful way. So it works, you know, the kind of bottom up and top down. I think it's super important for both to understand who and what plays the role that they need to, and that they should be doing in any business to, you know, to deliver. But I think feedback is key for a leader, to give constructive feedback with direction, but let that person, you know, prove themselves to deliver it. You're not spoon feeding them, you're showing them direction, and then they take that direction and deliver. Mm-hmm. And the same for anybody that's in a position, no matter where you are and how long you've been in your position. I think it takes time, and it takes courage to ask for feedback. I've seen it. I've been in that position as well, where I've been like, okay, and you walk away and you're like, I have no idea what to do now. And you go through turmoil, you feel sick, you sit for maybe double, triple the amount of time going through doing different scenarios because you're not sure which one they want. Whereas when you ask for constructive feedback, you're like, okay, you didn't seem to like that. Could you give me more information? And then it's not only more helpful for the leader to give that information, but also for the person receiving the feedback, because you know where to go. So I think that's something that I...
Again, it comes back to that fundamental five W process that I outlaid, is the why. Why? Because someone can't just give you a yes or no answer. They have to explain themselves. And that ultimately comes back down to whatever level of the hierarchy you are positioned at. It's all about having respect and just keeping your ears open, whether you're a leader or a subordinate, whatever. You know, I like flat structures, to be fair, because I think everyone's all in the same boat. I think if you're in a leadership position and you think you know it all, then you're not really in the right role. Like, you should be learning and evolving and improving for yourself and for your team day to day.
No, completely. I think you're never done learning, and that's the beauty of life, isn't it? You know, so life doesn't stand still, so you can walk through it. You have to keep moving, because the world is literally moving all the time. So I think that's a really
I think one thing like COVID taught us as well, like the pandemic, like it changed a shift in leadership because we had to change as a workforce. But that's on it.
No, I think that's really important and really sound. Like, I think there's so much about a role, and everybody has unique skill sets within their role. Like for you as a UX design lead, for me as somebody that's been in the textile world for many years, you have those unique skills that are specific to you. However, there's still, like you say, the fundamental things regardless that you need to do to be successful in a role. Like those things you've mentioned. So I think that's really important just to underpin those. But yeah, super, really, really interesting. And like I said at the start, you regardless of us and anybody that knows us and then those that don't, you and I are incredibly close. You're not only my sister, you're my best friend. So I think I know everything about you, but that's just been like a whirlwind of, wow, God, the intricacies of what you do on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, it's like anything, isn't it? The fires you have to put out at work every day, you know, just to get something over the line is, you know, it's incredible. No,
the good thing we've learned about this process and like doing this podcast is, and it's a key learning to give out to people, is leave your work at work, don't bring it home.
Oh, absolutely. We talk about,
like, we've learned about, well, you've learned a lot more about my role in this and what I do day to day and what I have done and where I've got to, et cetera, but you know, I don't bring it home because you've got to. I mean, younger years, I used to, but I think again that comes down to that wisdom piece and experience. It's like, just leave it home. I know the difference now, and I understand that work-life balance. And I look at other things, like other entities that I fill my time with in the evenings, not worrying, oh God, how did that email sound when I sent it? But did it sound abrupt? Did it, you know, what am I going to face in that meeting tomorrow in that presentation? Just deal with it when you deal with it. Like,
exactly. That does take time and it takes experience for sure. But once you get to that point, life becomes so much easier. I think whether it's circumstantial or age or wisdom or whatever you may call it, but once you get to that stage of tomorrow's another day, right now I'm going home to be with my home life, whatever that looks like, I think it's super important to be able to do that. So that kind of leads me into my last question, which is, if you weren't doing what you do right now, what would you do? What would, if you could not even reinvent, because I think as you go through your life, there's different things that you love. And as I often talk to people on this, actually, just to give a little bit of context before I hand back to you, you know, a lot of people, you don't just have one passion in life.
No.
You know, that's not just who we are. You're not just your job, you know. I have always loved fashion. I adore fashion. I love people. And my other thing is interior design. I love interior design. So for you, I know you love books, you love reading, you love writing, but what is your other passion that, if you were given a clean slate?
Yeah, I guess if money weren't an option, I'd be a full-time traveler, ticking off more nations on my country counter, like without a doubt. But also, yeah, like you said, books are a huge passion, reading, traveling. Food is also another passion of mine. So once this day job ceases to find its fascination with me, I would love to open my own deli, like come cafe, come coffee shop, come event space that, you know, you'd host wine tasting with, you know, poetry recitals, you know, opportunities for, you know, unpublished authors to come read some of their work, that type of thing, like always in that environment. And, you know, like after school classes for kids to have a nice safe space to come learn, revise, and, you know, chill with their friends, that kind of vibe. Like that's my vision. I just don't know how to get there yet, but, you know, maybe one day. And also, I guess, not putting off my ambition before I was 40, but that's not going to happen because that's very close, very closely coming around the corner, is my ambition to study another master's in anthropology at Queen's University in Belfast. So maybe one day.
It will. And I think at some point, in which I love this quote, is one day turns into day one. And I'm very much looking forward to that day one. And I know it'll happen because you're you and you make things happen. But thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed it first and foremost.
I always love
speaking to people on this different wavelength, and regardless if you know somebody, you know a part of somebody. I think there's always so much more to uncover about anybody. And I have done that today, which has been really, really nice. So I hope you've enjoyed it.
And I'm happy to share my portfolio on LinkedIn and everything with you if anyone has any questions about UX or content design. I'm also a mentor on ADP, so happy to help anyone out should they wish to, or just have a quick coffee catch up.
That's brilliant. I'll link everything on the YouTube channel, on Spotify, and also on my other social platforms, as Sarah mentioned, to do all them things, which I take the opportunity. I think they don't come across. So when you've got somebody that has such a colourful past like yourself, absolutely should take that opportunity. What I'll do is I will link them, as I say, on all the platforms. And thank you. And for anybody listening, I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. And don't forget, I will let you know to subscribe. I always forget to do this, but please subscribe to my channel. I would very much appreciate it. And the next episode will be out next Wednesday, so keep tuned. Thank you, Sarah. I've loved it so much.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.